Welcome back to Background Briefing. I'm Michael Hiltzik, sitting in for Ian Masters. And joining us now is Michael Grunwald, Time Magazine's senior national correspondent. Michael previously spent nearly a decade at the Washington Post, where he served as congressional correspondent, New York bureau chief, and national investigative reporter. He's the recipient of the George Polk Award for National Reporting, the Worth Bingham Prize for Investigative Reporting, among other honors. And his latest book is The New New Deal, which I really recommend for how it deconstructed the Obama stimulus program and showed how successful it really was in helping the economic recovery. Michael, welcome to Background Briefing.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be with you, Michael. I really admire your work on the old New Deal.
Well, thank you. We can use our books as sort of bookends to this discussion. I want to start by talking about one of the themes of your book and also a theme of a lot of the talks and presentations you've given on the subject of the Obama stimulus since your book's publication, and that's how groupthink in Washington produced this notion that the stimulus had failed. And how damaging was that notion, and how far did it spread? Clearly, it was all the rage within the Beltway. Did you find it also out in the countryside?
Well, sure. You know, as you mentioned, I lived for a long time in Washington, but now I'm in the public policy paradise of South Beach. And I have to say, I think if I still lived in D.C., I doubt I ever could have written this book. The idea that the stimulus was anything other than this $800 billion joke was just preposterous. It showed that even taking it seriously showed that you sort of didn't get it. When I told a lot of my friends in D.C. that I was working on this, they really thought I had lost my mind. And even my editors, you know, when I pitched them stories on the stimulus, I felt like that kid in the newsroom on HBO who's always pitching the story about how Bigfoot is real. I mean, it really is I think the reason that the media messed up this story as badly as they messed up, really any story since the run-up to the war on Iraq, is because of this notion that, the narrative in Washington just gets calcified so quickly. And I think this was a sort of odd combination of kind of Republicans doing a really good job of making this sound like, it was all about honeybee insurance and levitating trains to Disneyland and all kinds of other nonsense that wasn't in the stimulus, and Democrats not really being that interested in defending it, and Obama having some problems with his message, and the kind of understandable difficulty of a jobs bill passed at a time when jobs were hemorrhaging. But it all created this sort of perfect storm where national reporters who aren't very interested in public policy were able to just sort of scoff and roll their eyes and say, oh, yeah, the stimulus, it failed. And it had a real impact on the country. I mean, it's not a coincidence that even though, more than 90% of economists agree that this thing has created jobs and produced growth, the percentage of Americans a year after this thing passed who believed that the stimulus had created any jobs at all was lower than the percentage of Americans who believed Elvis was alive.
Right.
So that groupthink has a real impact.
And that still is sort of out there, out and abroad. And you mentioned this issue of Obama not really being able to communicate his message. And it's a good question as to how much we should blame Obama and the Democrats for that. I mean, one difference between Franklin Roosevelt and Barack Obama that I've talked about, drawing a line from my book, is that FDR never let the sun set without making sure that voters understood how much his New Deal had achieved and what was at stake in every election. And it seems to me that today's Democrats, on the other hand, maybe until perhaps the closing weeks of the last election, seemed to have this habit of running away from their successes. I mean, healthcare reform was not to be mentioned during the 2010 election, which in which, of course, the Democrats got trounced. And there never seemed to be a full-throated defense of the stimulus. And there didn't seem to be one, really, throughout much of this last presidential campaign. So how much should we blame Obama? How much should we blame this Democratic Party tendency to run away from its successes? And how much should we blame the press for not being willing to listen to the story?
Well, Michael, I wouldn't disagree with anything you said. I mean, I think, you know, believe me, and it's certainly as somebody who's written a book where the subtitle is The Hidden Story of Change in the Obama Era, it's been frustrating for me today, like, how come this Obama guy won't talk about all that change? That said, I always try to point out that this black guy whose middle name is Hussein and got himself elected president of the United States twice probably isn't a political idiot. And it was a different situation from FDR. And one thing that Larry Summers noticed in December 2008, and he said to some of his fellow economists on the Obama team, is he said that, you know, FDR was lucky. He had 2 years of depression before he took office. Everybody knew that it was Hoover's depression. And I do think that Obama, you know, the financial earthquake had hit, but the economic tsunami hadn't really reached the shore. So he took office at this time when we were losing 800,000 jobs a month. GDP was crashing at a 9% annual rate. But people weren't really feeling that badly yet. They had the sense that something bad was happening. But most of the pain actually happened after Obama took office. And so there is a sense that it's not clear that any kind of stimulus could have actually prevented the stimulus from looking bad. Ultimately, it was a jobs bill passed at a time when jobs were hemorrhaging. And although I detail and kind of, you know, nauseating minutia some of the messaging mistakes that I think Obama has made, I'm not sure that a really fantastic message would have made double-digit unemployment a lot more palatable to the American people.
Well, you may be right about that. In fact, I remember one of the very few interviews that I had with Larry Summers, in which he talked about how the public response to economic change is not sudden and not really blunt, but it's more like a rheostat, that bad times sort of infiltrate the public consciousness slowly and build, and then recovery does the same thing on the other end. And I think we were, in this last election, really on the cusp of recovery just beginning to penetrate the public consciousness in time for them to cast their votes. Now, that being said, when you and I, back in August, did a book salon on firedoglake.com, it was a great conversation. One of the questioners in the audience, so to speak, wrote in to say that his grandfather had got actual work during the Great Depression from the New Deal, and he didn't see Obama creating any actual work. And that sort of reminded me of an old line that I think one of my history professors had told me in college, which was, you should never underestimate the importance of a symbol. FDR seemed to have some big, iconic public works projects to point to as symbols of the New Deal. Triborough Bridge in New York was one, probably the biggest one. And he even claimed credit for Hoover Dam, even though that was not a New Deal project. And in fact, he had taken Hoover's name off it. Now, Obama didn't seem to be able to do the same thing, or at least not to the same extent. And do you think it would have helped to at least get the point across if he had had some monumental physical manifestation to point to?
Well, sure. Well, one of the things I try to point out is that while, you know, they didn't have a Skyline Drive or a Triborough Bridge or a Grand Coulee Dam, they did have the largest dam removal project in the history of the United States to restore salmon runs on the Elwha River, and it did have a half dozen of the world's largest solar farms and America's largest wind farm and a dozen of America's first cellulosic biofuel refineries and 30 new advanced battery factories that really created a sort of supply chain for electric vehicles out of thin air in the United States. Now, again, these were different kind of icons, and they're not the kind of icons maybe that people encounter in their lives every day, and they're not the kind of icon like Fort Knox that becomes a sort of part of America's, you know, sort of cultural who we are. But look, you know, the The New Deal hired millions of people to work directly at these alphabet agencies like the WPA and the CCC, and certainly Obama's new New Deal did not do that. It didn't really create big government because FDR had already created it. But that said, it did employ directly at its peak about 750,000 people, and it added 2.5 million to 3 million jobs. Just about all the economists agree over what we would have had otherwise. And really the problem was that we had an 8 million job hole, and that it wasn't really, as Vice President Biden liked to say, it wasn't supposed to carry the whole sleigh. I think if unemployment had been lower, people would have felt better about some of the icons that we had. And then the other thing I should point out is that two of the major icons that Obama was counting on ended up being killed by Republicans. One was high-speed rail, specifically the train in Florida, which was supposed to be the first bullet train, was supposed to be coming online right about now, and Governor Rick Scott of Florida killed it when he was elected in 2010. And the other was a nationwide school-building initiative that was supposed to pour $10 billion into really reinvigorating the physical stock and greening America's schools. And Susan Collins, the senator from Maine, the Republican senator, said she wouldn't vote for the stimulus if that wasn't taken out. And, you know, bills that don't get 60 votes in the Senate don't make change. So it came out. And that's then maybe that would have been the sort of iconic thing people could have pointed to.
Right. And I think you haven't mentioned, I'm not entirely sure this was part of the Obama stimulus, but it was certainly emblematic of this Republican mindset. Chris Christie, who we're supposed to honor these days as a paragon of bipartisanship and clear thinking, killed a tunnel project from New Jersey into Manhattan because he said his state couldn't afford it, even though it was going to be funded largely by the federal government. And of course,
that absolutely was stimulus funded. And in fact, some of the money, you know, people talk about how there was going to be so much waste in the stimulus. In fact, that's some of the only money that you can say was actually wasted, was some of the money that was spent planning that tunnel that Chris Christie just killed. It turned out people said that 5 to 7% of the stimulus would be lost to fraud. The actual numbers has turned out to be 0.001%. But yes, no, that's a perfect example of something of a iconic project that was killed. That said, there were three iconic New York City projects that went ahead. The Moynihan Station and the new Penn Station got a lot of stimulus money, and that's starting to happen. A connection from the Long Island Railroad to Grand Central. Well, I grew up in Long Island, so that's a big deal to my family.
That's right. So did I, and I remembered the difficulty of getting from Penn Station to
the Second Avenue Subway, which on the east side is something that people have been dreaming about for decades. And those are all going to be huge, iconic projects. The New York Times Magazine did a whole photo essay on the work on the Second Avenue Subway. It's just that people don't think of them as stimulus projects. They weren't branded in the same way that the old New Deal was.
And of course, what's important about all of those is that it's infrastructure, and the savings to the economy and the growth that they're going to inspire in the economy really have to be tallied as part of the impact of the stimulus. Now, one of the common threads linking the old New Deal that I've written about and the new New Deal that you've written about is that in terms of fiscal stimulus, as we understand it, it may be that neither was big enough to actually achieve all of the recovery that was necessary. Now, in the 30s, the reason is that FDR and his New Dealers and his brain trust didn't really understand the concept of fiscal stimulus. John Maynard Keynes wasn't well known in the U.S. yet. He hadn't really his codification of deficit spending in hard times hadn't penetrated these shores. So their fiscal stimulus programs were really aimed at relief and work assistance. And there's a great line from Corey Brown, an economist of the 50s, saying that the fiscal stimulus didn't fail in the 1930s. It simply wasn't tried. And I think you've pointed out that there was a lot of discussion in the White House about how big the fiscal stimulus should be when the Obama administration came into office. But it clearly was, and there's been a lot of criticism about this, it was pared back from what really would have been necessary. Is that a fair assessment of what happened?
I think it's true that certainly more stimulus would have been better. That, you know, more aid to states would have prevented more layoffs of teachers and firefighters and police officers and other public employees. More tax cuts would have put more money into taxpayers' pockets. More aid to victims of the Great Recession would have done the same, and more public works obviously would have put more unemployed construction workers on the job. That's true. One thing I think I really documented in the book is that there was no political appetite for one dime more than Obama got. You had three Republican senators and at least half a dozen Democrats drawing a line in the sand at $800 billion. And it turned out that later, after the original stimulus, Obama did go back and get another about $700 billion worth that did help. You know, it's one of the main reasons that the U.S. economy, while not great, has been growing, while you've seen Europe, which really embraced austerity, has had a double-dip recession, has been because Obama was able to keep pushing for some more stimulus in 2009 and 2010.
And
he didn't run out around the country and say, I want a second stimulus, because the S word had become toxic by then. But there's no doubt that, if Paul Krugman were czar, he doesn't need a supermajority to pass his column, but if he got to decide how big the stimulus was, it would have been bigger, and that would have been better. But the Obama people really were at the, as they say, we thought we were in the deep end of the pool, and they really were. A bunch of liberal economists wrote a letter in November 2008 saying that Obama needed to go big, he needed to be bold, he needed at least a $350 billion stimulus. And of course he got twice that, and now most of those same economists are whining that he's such a wimp, he's such a sellout, why didn't he go bigger?
Right. Well, of course, that points to the old adage that politics is really the art of the possible. And one thing that I think both of us have probably noticed is that both FDR and Barack Obama came into office with a lot of support from progressives, and progressives are always the first people, the first politically involved class to decide that that their favorite candidates aren't measuring up. And FDR came under a lot of criticism from the left for not for giving away too much to Wall Street, even though he had passed two great securities regulatory bills. And of course, we've heard over and over again that Barack Obama somehow isn't as progressive as we'd like. Well, I think
I've taken a lot of abuse because I do call them the disillusionment addicts of the left in the book. And I just do feel, the people who say, why was there no public option in healthcare reform? Why was there no, why didn't he break up the banks and financial reform? One thing, President Obama, he did run as a pragmatist, even after all that fancy rhetoric. And he did understand that bills that don't pass Congress don't make change. And he needed 60 votes.
Right.
And he didn't have 60 votes for a public option, and he didn't have 60 votes for breaking up the banks, and he didn't have 60 votes for a stimulus that, would have buttered everybody's bread and solved every national problem. Certainly my book sort of makes the case that launching a clean energy revolution and digitizing medicine and, the most ambitious education reform since LBJ and the largest infrastructure investment since Eisenhower and the largest middle-class tax cut since Reagan and the largest research investments ever. But that was pretty good for his first month in office.
That's what he got, and that's right. It's an impressive record. Well, thank you again for joining us today, Michael Grunwald.
It's been a pleasure. Really, thanks so much.
And once again, I've been speaking with Michael Grunwald, Time Magazine's senior national correspondent and the author of The New Deal, great analysis of the Obama stimulus. We're going to take a station break now, and after we come back, we'll be talking with Michael Eisen, a professor of biology at the University of California at Berkeley and an investigator at the Howard Hughes Medical Institute.